1.
Log Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
Flight guidance.
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this sound track.
Roger.
On the ping.
Roger, I copy guidance.
Okay,
we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot del H. Based on the data you had for an LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're yelling fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue. PDI.
Coming to you live from the slopes of the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country and in the paranormally active shadow of Mount Rainier, it's Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your hosts, John Almada and Kat Lang.
Here's something off the request line from Liberty Island. We gotta squeeze some New Year's juice from you, Big Apple.
You know your love is more than the sun.
My God, that was a little too loud, but welcome to the New York show.
Woo-hoo!
Woo-hoo! New York, third largest state in the union, just the third most popular, actually not third largest, third most populous. We got to be, you know, correct in our facts here.
Yes.
And it's an amazingly big state, a lot of things in it, that a lot of history, New York City, of course, in reference to Ghostbusters 2, where that music was from. And Kat, it's time for another installment.
It is time for another installment.
Oh
yes.
No. Well, hey, we're really blessed this particular show. We've got Sal from the Shanley Hotel over in Napanock, New York.
Yeah.
Going to be visiting us and talking about that very, very haunted I believe it's a bed and breakfast that he has out there.
Yeah.
And that's going to be at the 8:30 hour. And we also have someone who I met on my recent trip to the Queen Mary, Chris Stanley, who is going to talk about some of her childhood experiences living in New York State, and may tell us a story or two about a pool-playing priest ghost. So, that said, we've got another show in the works, and, oh, I see Sal is on the, hello, Sal, we see you out there.
Hi, Sal.
Hey, welcome aboard, Sal, we see you in the chat room.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure who's calling on the line here. If you could hang up and come back at the half-hour break, we'll be interviewing Sal and Chris at that time, and then what we'll do is open up the chat line for questions at that time. But as you all know, on our 90-minute format, we always start with the news, the paranormal news, and the things like that, and then just kind of get into some discussions about EVPs. And then
that's right.
That's, you know, you sound like an EVP tonight.
Okay.
So that said, let's. I'm going to try this out. I went all out and did some audio work, and I'm about ready to find it. If I can find it now, we'll take this down to 50, 25%. So here we go, the official news leader. Okay, it's time once again for Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio News of the Week. That really came out pretty well. Do you think that?
I think that sounded just dandy.
Okay, so anyway, what we've got leading the Leading the news of the weird was the pet shop received delivery of a dead man instead of tropical fish.
I know!
That wasn't right, man. Staff at a Philadelphia pet shop expecting a shipment of tropical fish and salt water were shocked when they received instead a dead body of a man.
Yowch! And,
when Mark Arabia, owner of the Pets Plus store, went out to the delivery man's vehicle to collect the $1,000 fish supply he'd ordered, he instead discovered a coffin. At first I looked at it and I said, fish never come in this way. He said eventually he learned that the body inside was that of a 65-year-old man from San Diego, California, who died of early-onset Alzheimer's disease. And it turns out that the woman, I saw the interview with this woman who said that, oddly enough, the man who was dead was a post office worker. So,
give new meaning to the phrase, going postal.
I know, he went postal, and he actually got, she thinks that it was his way of kind of pulling a practical joke because he was known for his practical jokes. So what better way to do that than to, you know, be sent off to eternity to for research, you know, his body. He gave his body to science, and instead he ends up at a pet store.
How many stamps do you think that coffin would take?
I don't know. What I heard was U.S. Airways. I think it was U.S. Airways accidentally rerouted it to the wrong address. So, that wasn't right. So,
I don't think that's right at all.
That's just not right.
It's not.
Yeah, but so I think all is well. I think they've taken care of the issue, and I guess return postage wasn't needed. But anyway, let's move on to the next item. We have this is from the Nicholsworth, the independent newspaper of Nicholls State University. I'm not even sure where this is. But local Ghostbusters investigate paranormal activities, and this is by Rene Bergeron, story date of 3/12/09, and says here that Callie Chavon sees dead people, at least she tries to. Ever since I was a little girl, I've always experienced things, Callie says. I remember one night when I was 17 years old, my parents went to the camp while I stayed at home upstairs by myself, and I had turned off all the lights and gone to bed. I had the sheet on top of me, and I was really cold, shaking even, and as I began to fall asleep, something pulled the covers up and tucked me in,
like
my grandmother used to, literally pulled them up to my neck, and it was not the first time or the last. Now, 30 years later, she's a school teacher by night and a ghost hunter by night, and she leads a team of 17 paranormal investigators called the Bayou Spirits. So, obviously, this is in Louisiana. We've got the link for this out on the show page, so if you do happen to want to check this one out, it goes on to talk about the work that great group is doing, so we always feature them as we see them out there. We got another story, paranormal researchers to overtake library, and you know how I am about this cat.
Mm-hmm.
This story is about from Southington, Connecticut. Due to the interest sparked by the upcoming horror thriller film The Haunting in Connecticut, the Connecticut Paranormal Encounters and Research Group will hold a free seminar on April 2nd at the Southington Library. According to Random House Dictionary, the word paranormal is of or pertaining to the claimed occurrences of an event or perception without scientific explanation or other purportedly supernatural phenomena. And anyway, they're going to present that on April 2nd, and it's free to the public. To register, you just go to the library's website, which is on the page, or you can call 860-628-0947. So this link is also out on the show page, so if you're interested in that, definitely give it a look. And if you're also a paranormal group runner of things such as I am and Kat, I highly encourage you to get out there and meet the public and just get your name out there.
Mm-hmm.
Final one tonight. Just happened to see this in the San Francisco Examiner, and you know they've got some really good reporting that goes on this website. And it shows a Navy officer has a UFO close encounter on a secluded California highway.
And I wrote it all down.
You think you can get tigers on for a dollar?
Hello.
What the heck is that?
I believe it would be a certain parent who forgot I was next door on the main line.
Hi, Mom.
She's off now. So
okay.
Anyway, as we go on after that freaky thing, an off-duty Navy petty officer, second class, had just gotten off duty at California's then Naval Air Station in Miramar, which is Fighter 10, was at one time Fighter 10 USA. That's where Top Gun was filmed.
Uh-huh.
Was driving along when his vehicle suddenly shut off on a dark and secluded piece of Interstate 15. As he went to get a gas can out, because he thought he was out of gas, the next thing he knows, he hears an unusual sound like a release of air. And it drew his attention to the darkness on the other side of the four-lane highway, and he sees an object that is of long, low, and extremely streamlined and silhouetted. And this occurred in 1971. And so this story, following is his original accounting of the incident, only minor editing changes are completed. So it was really interesting to see a former military officer, yet another one, come out talking about his experience. And they tend to wait quite a while because of the, you know, I believe what happens is they're just ordered not to talk about these things.
You think that would include any type of ramifications for speaking out about the possibility that UFOs exist coming from a military personnel?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm a big believer in some of the writings of Philip Corso, and one of the things I'm trying to do is get in contact with his son and see about having him come on and talk some about what his father's work was. And Phil Corso, for those of you who don't know, was a lieutenant colonel who did an awful lot of work with the captured pieces of Roswell materials that ended up in the Army's custody. And a lot of current developments in electronics and technology were fed into the defense and military infrastructure and civilian infrastructure by Corso and his boss, General Trudeau, who
uh-huh.
decided to get this stuff into the manufacturing stream covertly. And so they came up with a program that basically incensed the hell out of a lot of civilian intelligence agencies, because everybody wanted to get hold of it and figure out what the other guy had, and here these guys are basically giving it away. And so his book, The Day After Roswell, is one that I'm a real big fan of. And so, you know, when I see a military story like this, it kind of gets my attention now. This sort of thing happened quite a bit around California, these sorts of sightings. And a matter of fact, one of our next show or two will be featuring an encounter, some discussions about an encounter in our area from somebody real close to me. And so
mm-hmm.
she's a little hesitant to go live on the radio, so we'll just be basically playing a taped interview and then take questions from there. But anyway, go ahead and take a look at this you know, story. It's, it goes on for quite a bit, and see what you think. And
you know, I can tell my bizarre story, too.
Oh, what's that?
You know, the green light.
Yeah, you've go ahead and talk about that. You
that
know,
was
you had a,
fascinating.
Had a story at your own home there. In, yeah, I guess you were not where at, Puyallup or?
Yeah.
Yeah, so go ahead and talk about it.
That was crazy. It was about, what was it, 10 years ago, maybe 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was asleep, and I woke up, and for some reason, I just woke up out of a dead sleep, and my whole bedroom was lime, neon kind of green. It was blinding. The closet was green, the bathroom was green, but the hallway was dark. And my levelors were closed, and this light was coming right through the levelors, and it lit up the whole room. I mean, it was blinding. It was so green.
Yeah.
And it didn't make any noise, and I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And the guy that I was dating at the time was asleep next to me. We shared an apartment, and I was on top of him, literally shaking him to wake up. And he wouldn't wake up, and he usually would wake up just like that.
Yeah.
And I ran out in the hallway, and I ran down into the living room, and I looked up at the clock, and I for missing time, and I quite frankly thought that I was going to see these little gray people. It was what dawned on me, and as soon as I opened the door to the deck, it quit.
That's wild.
But it never made a noise, and I kind of flipped out and ran back down the hall and stood in the doorway and called this guy's name, and he just sat right up, and he actually grabbed his gun. He thought somebody was in the house trying to hurt me.
And so when he got up and checked, there was nothing there, but that was...
Yeah, and in fact, the next morning, I guess, he had bruises on his arms from me grabbing him and shaking him. And he said, "Where do these come from?" And I told him, and he's like, "No way." I said, "Yeah." That's what scared me the most, was that he would not wake up from his sleep. I thought I was going to look down the hall and see these little gray men.
Well, I have.
It was shocking. It was shocking. And the next day, the managers came up, and I called the Pierce County Sheriff's, and they came up, and we couldn't figure out where this green light would have come from that was that bright, because it made no noise whatsoever, none.
I had a experience when I was...
It was crazy.
Yeah, my teenage years in Roseville, when I lived in Roseville, California, and I looked out one day, and here we are, middle of a city out in Northern California. Walked out early summer evening, looked, and I saw what looked like a cigar shape, and I thought at first it was a jet because McClellan Air Force Base was just, maybe 10 miles away, and the flight pattern was normally went right there,
mm-hmm.
right at the place. So I looked, and I looked again, and this thing looked more like a cigar than anything, and I could not see wings. And it was the one time I've seen something that I could not identify as an aircraft that was flying. And the other thing that was very disturbing is I heard no engine sounds.
Oh, I know.
And so I watched it disappear off, and and I would tend to think I know aircraft because, I've grown up around most of the people who, would come to dinner were captured Project Paperclip German scientists who invented most of the rocketry for the country. So, I grew
uh-huh.
up around all these guys. I know kind of what I'm looking at. I was around this all the infrastructure when it was being built. So it was a very strange sighting. And then a couple of other times up here in Shingle Springs, I've seen two triangular black-shaped craft with engine sounds unlike anything I've ever heard. And I would tend to think that probably is our stuff.
Knows?
It's probably a military, U.S. military craft, but it was extremely unusual to see this black triangular shape in the night sky just go over and strange engine noise. It was very much more high-pitched than anything I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And the other thing would be the other one was I saw for a period of time in the late 1990s, I saw the famed jet that would go back and forth, and every time it would go back and forth, it would leave a cloud trail behind it, and then the clouds would stay there for days and days and days, and it would be overcast the next day. So these things are real, and a lot of times what you're seeing are explainable, sometimes not. So, hey, we've got a caller who's being really patient. I'm not sure who this is. I'm going to give this a real go here and see if we can find out who's on. So let's give it a whirl here. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hey. Well, I think I'm going to just go ahead and put the back on hold then because I don't see who that could be. All right, so that person is just sitting there waiting. Maybe they took a break, and we'll come back to them at another time.
Well, because I know you've told me about that story before, because
mm-hmm.
we talked about it when I was down there visiting. And I guess the question that I would have for you about that story is, did you feel the same, that was your first instinct the same as mine, that it's not making any noise?
Yeah,
was that your first thought?
My first thought was I stopped and stood and observed it and just was more quizzical than anything else. So I thought, where's the jet noise? And there are times that you'll see jets that are coming towards you, and you know, and what you expect when a jet's coming towards you, you'll eventually hear it. You know, at some point the sound will reach you.
Mm-hmm.
What was mysterious about this, instead of being coming at me, it was coming, it was crossing left to right in front of me. And I would have heard something, and I heard nothing. It was just.
Isn't the speed, the speed of sound is like 8 seconds?
Well, speed of sound is 670 some odd miles an hour, something like that, and maybe a little less.
Well, you would have heard something.
I would have heard something, and what was stunning to me was the lack of wings. You know, and usually these guys would, on their flight pattern, would go in and then they would bank, and you would see the bank as they were lining up on the runway, and you couldn't see this. So, and the other disturbing part was there was no navigation lights, which for that time of the, it was early evening, and I still would have been able to see these things, you know, all the telltale characteristics of an airplane.
Well, yeah.
So it just left me wondering what to think, you know.
Because I live on the flight pattern of McCord Air Force Base, and the C-130s, they do maneuvers, and sometimes they come in, and they just barely crest the top of the trees. I mean, they do these low flights, and, I mean, you can clearly, even if they're up a little bit higher, you can clearly see the wings. But you can, I mean, you can hear them, I know, but, I mean, as far as visual, you can see the wings.
Yeah, and I've got Chris Stanley, one of our guests, is out there on the on one of the chat rooms, and she's asking, when did I see this? Well, I saw this back in probably about 1974. It was just, you know, and it was in southern Roseville, which is just outside of Sacramento. So the only time I ever saw anything like that, a totally silent aircraft, It just left me very confused at the time. I remember going in and trying to tell my parents about it, and they looked at me funny. But, you know, my mother didn't look at me too funny because of her past experiences and she saw over in Lincoln. So, yeah, she'd had her own, you know, encounter over at the old Titan base that they used to have out there outside.
Right.
And she's the person I'm going to interview about that, because she's a little too embarrassed to get on the radio live, so I have to interview her at the coffee table.
You know, I actually, if you want to do this UFO thing, I do actually know a few people that are around the McCord Air Force Base that have seen odd things. They cannot give their names, but they probably would be interviewed for the show.
Well, yeah, we could talk about it. I think
just can't say their names.
Yeah, I tend to think that you know, that you don't want to, for your own career survival, even in this day and age, 50 years after Roswell, you know, it's still a problem to talk about it until you're, you know, past your getting into your retirement years, and you just really don't care anymore what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm at you know, I've got 24 years in the business myself, and you know, I'm 6 years away from getting out of it. You know, and moving into retirement and being a full-time ghost hunter and writer. So, you know, I'm at the point I just really don't care what they think. I just find the whole thing interesting, and not only that, it's a big universe. I think that the Earth has been visited many, many times in the past, and will continue to be visited. And who knows what's happened in and around us all, you know, every day. I just think that there's more and more evidence that the universe is extremely full of life, and that we're just a way station along the way out in the middle of yet another common galaxy, you know. Well, that said, we're coming up on the break time.
Right.
And we've got, I'll just remind that we've got Sal from the Shanley Hotel out in Napanock. And we've got Chris Stanley. So I wanted to let Sal know that we did a little research on a song just for him.
That's right.
Yeah, we did a little bit of research, and I found a great song for him that was by a lady named whose last name is Shanley. And not only that, the lyrics were rather pointed, and it's actually country music, but it's a fairly good song. So I'm going to go ahead and play it, and then if Sal can dial in along with Chris and just let me know on the chat room that you're dialed up, I'll go ahead and answer you guys and pipe you in. And let's see. Hopefully they're going to make their presence known here.
Right.
I hope that they're there. I see
one. That's
right. I see one number. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead. It's 8:25, and we're going to go ahead and play this, if I can find it. And here it is, in honor of the Shanley Hotel.
That's right.
We got us a couple of New York folks on the line here. Let's see. Sal, are you there? Oh, God, I hope he's there.
Sal?
Is there anyone there?
Chris is here.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, John.
Yeah, hey, good to see you.
How are you doing?
Yeah, well, pretty good. It was a long drive back from the Queen Mary. But, I got your story here already. I'm just hoping I see Sal in there someplace.
I saw him in the chat room.
Yeah, I hope he dials in, because I've got this other number that I'm not sure that I... It shows it connected, but I'm not sure. Sal, are you there, buddy? If you're not, we'll continue on. But I hope you come in.
Come on, Sal.
Oh, my
goodness. He's really close to where I grew up. I never realized that hotel was there.
Oh, my God. I just saw something in the chat room that somebody named Quentin says, I'll wear my buttless chaps.
That's right.
Oh, no.
Okay,
oh,
hey,
no.
We got it. Here we go. I see a number dialing in, so I'm going to go ahead and take that. And if I can get the timing right, because this screen is weird out. Sal, are you there, buddy?
Yes, I'm here. Good
hey,
evening.
Hi, Sal.
Hi there. How you doing?
Oh, my God, I haven't talked to you for so long.
I know. You thought I forgot about you.
Well, I know you couldn't forget about me, that's for sure.
Oh, listen to that New York accent. I love it.
Well, hey, guys, welcome to the show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah. I thank you for having us.
Yeah, we've heard a lot about the Shanley, and, you know, you're based out of Napanock, New York, which is, I'm not sure where on the map you guys are, but I think you're way far from New York City. You're near...
About 2 hours from New York City, two
okay.
and a half, about 100 miles. We're right at the tip of the Catskill Mountains.
Okay. And,
we're neighbors, Sal.
Are we?
Well, I grew up in Kingston, Ulster County.
Oh, man, right. But I'm in Ulster County.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kingston's only 40 minutes from here.
Yeah, my sister lives in Stone Ridge.
Oh, right. Fantastic.
Small world.
Yes,
it is.
I know. Next time I come to New York, I'll have to find you at the Shanley and stay overnight.
Yeah, anytime. You can tell your sister to stop in. Say hello.
Definitely.
Sal, I'm coming in June, and I demand the Rose Room.
Okay.
That's all I got to say.
I'm going to be coming out, too. I definitely want
everybody, to. Everybody fights over the Rose Room.
I'm not fighting anybody.
I'll take a guy room, you know, something. No Rose or something.
I'll put him in
the basement.
I'll put him in Marguerite's room.
All right.
Put him in the basement.
Oh, he's going to put me in the bordello. There was a bordello there, right?
Yes. We're working on that now.
Well, can you tell us a little of the history of maybe the Shanley and also your own, how you came to possess the Shanley and what you're going through with it and where you're going with it and all that?
Well, when I first moved to this area, I was originally from a small town. I'm originally from Brooklyn. But I moved up here in 1974, and I moved to a small town called Jeffersonville.
Okay.
And then I got into restoring houses. So we were buying old houses, and a lot of people wanted them torn down, but we seen the beauty in the house, what
yeah.
it could be, and we started restoring it. And just before I bought the hotel, I had bought an old stone house that was built in 1707, which was 6,000 square feet. And
yeah.
I finished that off, and I says, I'm not going to take on another big project. And every time I passed the hotel, which is about a block and a half away, it kept on saying, buy me. And the hotel was up for sale.
Cool.
And I bought it, and the place was a disaster. I mean... Mm. A whole building. It was empty for like 13 years, and the kids were in here, destroyed things, and it was the ceilings were hanging down. It was just a complete disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought it, and the night after we had the closing, myself, my wife, and another couple, we came up to the second floor of the hotel. It was an old kitchen. And we sat in there, we lit a candle, and we were talking about the hotel. And all of a sudden, we heard footsteps come up the staircase. And they were loud. All four of us heard it. And we head for the kitchen door, and I turn around and says, I remember locking the downstairs door.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
When we opened the kitchen door, there was nobody there. We searched the whole building. We thought maybe somebody broke in or something, you know, because kids used to come in and out of here. We couldn't find a thing. And then just from then on, things just started picking up more and more, and a lot more activity. It's just unbelievable. I mean, there's not a day goes by that there's something new that doesn't happen, you know. we treat them, we don't call them ghosts. We call them spirits, and we treat them as family. And they take care of us, and we take care of them. They let us know when somebody's in a building that doesn't belong in a building or they're not sure of. When they walk through the front door, I have all my smoke detectors are all hardwired together. And the one downstairs as you walk in the front door, when I first installed them, certain people would walk in and that alarm would go off and set off everyone in the hotel. And I changed it like 2-3 times, figuring there was something wrong with it. And then we finally figured out what was causing it, you know. And
well, but it was a beneficial signal to you that there was something to
right,
look up.
Right.
And,
you know, and like I say, they let us know. We call them family, you know, and they let us know, you know. And there's a lot of things that go on in here, you know. Certain times of the year, we started just recently, I wouldn't feel good or my wife wouldn't feel good. And then we keep track of everything. When a lot of the spirits, because we investigate all the information, we look up information that psychic mediums give us and stuff like that. We do all the research on it, and we look up newspaper articles and we check records and we found out that those times when we didn't feel good and things were going wrong, we would look at the old calendar that we had written down all this information and find out that something in the past happened that same week or that same day. You know, and it's just something that we're feeling like if there's really something that was really sorrowful. Like my wife had an incident where she was getting stomach cramps and everything, and we found out that Esther, that week, Esther had lost a child in childbirth, and she passed away too. You know,
wow.
So, Esther being one of the spirits that now inhabit.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so your wife's name is Cindy, I take it.
Cindy, yes. And she's sensitive. She's a lot more sensitive than she was. They bother her a lot more than they bother me. Because I don't pay attention half of the time. You know, when they go to her, they let her know what's going on, you know. And a lot of times she don't sleep at night. They keep her busy. They'll shake her bed and they'll let her know things. They let us know when they want somebody out of the hotel. You know, we had that a couple of times where I had to ask somebody to leave, you know, during an investigation. And and this is, you know, and they take, like I say, they take care of us, you know. And I love when people come that are skeptics. I have nothing against skeptics. I believe a person should have a certain amount of being a skeptic, you know.
Yeah.
You don't believe everything that you hear and you see. And when they come here, 99% of the times they leave a believer. You know, it's unbelievable. You know, it's and the spirits enjoy when you're having fun. They'll interact with you.
No, that's
you know, as long as you come with an open mind and a good attitude, they'll interact with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a bunch of women here, and I don't think I could say it over the air, but we had a bunch of women here about 3 weeks ago, and they were upstairs. We have a gentleman on third floor, and his name is Joe, or we call him Joe, and he's grumpy. He's not a mean spirit. He's the spirit that likes his privacy.
Oh,
and
I've run
a lot
into
of
those.
A lot of times when you go into his room, you can feel him pushing up against your chest, like telling you, you came so far, that's it, you're not coming no further. And the girls were up there, and they were laughing and giggling and having a good time. And they asked him, Joe, is there anything that you want to say to us, sir? You know, and he turned around and he told them where to go.
Whoa.
And I mean, you had to see. When they played the tape recorder back, we went downstairs, and they were listening over to see if they got any EVPs. When they got that, I mean, I thought they were going to die. Their eyes opened up like silver dollars. Their mouths, they couldn't believe. And there was only women upstairs. It was just them. And you could hear the man's voice. It's a deep voice. And he came out and he told them, you know. And he's gone out a few times. When Craig McManus was here from Cape May, he's a psychic medium. Yeah. And he was up on the third floor, and he went into the room, and he asked if there was anybody in there that wanted to be known. And he got a strong no back. And that's on my website on the first page. If you click that on it, I mean, all the EVPs on my website are Class A's. They haven't been tampered with. The way we get them, that's the way they go on the website. If
yeah,
I have to play around with them, I don't consider them good EVPs.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
And a lot of groups have all kinds of experiences here. You know, it's unbelievable.
Well, we got a few that I loaded that after I talked to you the other day, and I picked a few out, and the one with the French spoken was the most interesting. I can actually play that and then have you comment on that and tell us a little bit about that.
All right.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and go with this one, and I'm going to play it at the console here gives me all sorts of percentages, so I'm just going to play it at the 100% and see if everybody can pick it up.
Spend more about a movie and a dinner.
Uh-huh.
Ridiculous. Enchanté. Hello, my lucky teeth.
You guys, some groups.
Did you hear that?
My gosh.
No, I'll back it off and play it one more time at 70, and then we'll just have Sal comment. And here we go.
Spend more about a movie and a dinner.
Uh-huh.
Ridiculous. Enchanté. Hello, my lucky teeth.
You guys, some groups.
Wow.
Ooh.
Enchanté, amelo petit.
What is...
Right.
Yeah.
That means Enchanté is very small.
Right. Now, that was Nancy and Jane from Port Paranormal, and Brian was down there, myself and Billy. And they were just talking. And that's a saying that Jane says all the time. The first French saying, and then all of a sudden you heard the answer come after that.
Oh, so one of them spoke French, and then the other got a response right after.
Right, right. The first couple of French words was Jane saying it, and then all of a sudden you hear the other woman say it in the background, said answers her. Something about the young child or something, or my lucky child or something. We're still trying to figure that one out. You know, different people that speak French say it means different things, you know. But that surprised us. And we were just having a conversation. And that's what mostly happens in a hotel. During a conversation, that's when the spirits will interact. They'll get into the conversation, you know.
Yeah, we get a lot of that out here. It's just amazing. You're especially you'll do EVP at a point where you're just leave the recorder on and you're not really trying to do EVPs, and you're conducting a conversation, and you'll just get the darndest interactions. And but I'm looking here too. There's one here I thought was pretty funny. I call it the Owl Move EVP, and I'll play this at 70%. And have you comment on that. Here we go. Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah, you can hear that.
Yeah, I'll play it one more
time. Yeah, go ahead. Play it.
I'll play it one more time. Since everybody hears it.
Oh.
Yeah,
boy, that guy's got a low voice, doesn't he?
Right. And that's the same voice that we got from when the young ladies were here a couple of weeks ago. Now, that one there was taken from Central Jersey was here. Kathy and her husband, Michael, were up on the third floor.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Joe again?
Yes. And Kathy had said something, and Joe turned around and says, "I'll move." You know.
Wow.
I don't know if you picked out the one with the Al Capone.
No, I didn't pick that up.
I didn't hear that.
I didn't hear that one, but we've got the Answer Me Kid, I think is the other one. I think it said Answer Me or Answer Me Kid that
right,
you had on
right.
one of the pages, so I'm going to play that. I'll take that down to 70. And here we go.
Party's over.
Now, I'm going to back that off down to 50 because it was so loud. But you could definitely hear that at the end. It was a response.
Party's over.
Yeah, what was that one, Sal?
Wow.
That was down in the bar area. My wife and my stepdaughter, and there was somebody else with them, Barbara, I think her name was, and they were trying to do some EVPs and stuff down in the bar room, and my stepdaughter was trying to talk to them, and when they weren't responding, she turned around and said, well, the party's over, and that's when she got to Answer Me.
Well,
I said answer me. That's exactly what it says.
All right. So this is just the everyday thing there. You know, you
yes,
guys have
yes.
this almost all the time. How you had never, when this all started, when you first bought the hotel, it had never been something that you had ever really had any experience with. Then this all just started up, you know, the minute you got in there and that door, the story you related.
Right, right. You know, we had a little activity at the Stone House, but nothing really to talk about. You know, like at the Stone House, my wife and I, when we first started working on it, because we do our own work, and we first started working on it, we were upstairs having lunch, and we heard somebody as clear as day say hello. And we looked at each other, and I went down a staircase, and there wasn't a soul out there. And then a couple other small incidents, but nothing really to talk about, you know?
Yeah.
Like we'd be sitting having coffee at the table, and a dime or a quarter come flying down a staircase, hit the door, and land at our feet.
Huh.
You know, and things like that. But the hotel is completely different. It's constant. Constant going on, you know.
Well, now it seems like there's whole layers of history with this place. You know, just based
on the hotel was originally built in 1845, and the hotel was smaller at that time. And next door to the hotel was a house. The house caught on fire, spread to the hotel. And both of them burned down to the ground. Back in those days, they had bucket brigades. They didn't have fire trucks like we have today.
Yeah, no pumper trucks.
No pumper trucks, you know. And so when the gentleman that owned the hotel, he swore up and down that he wasn't going to rebuild. Well, that was in March. And it was just before St. Patrick's Day in March. And by September, they were plastering the floor, the walls on the third floor. I don't know what changed his mind, but he rebuilt the hotel. And when he rebuilt it on both foundations, on the foundation of the house and the hotel foundation.
Okay.
You know, and from there, the hotel's been active ever since. The hotel was open since, until it closed down in 1980-something, the day after St. Patrick's Day. So, reason, you know.
Well, go ahead.
There's been a lot of owners to the hotel, and I don't know why, but the only two people that ever kept the hotel the longest was Mr. Shanley, who bought the hotel in 1906, and Mr. Hazen, who bought it in 1945, and both of them were well-respected people in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And they both were born the same day but different years, and they both died the same day, different years.
No.
Oh, that's really weird.
That is a weird.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so, and they were really the only ones that really ever took care of the hotel. That's why I'm glad my birthday's not Halloween.
Yeah, I saw that Halloween tradition you guys have. You know,
well, that was Mr. Shanley and Mr. Hazen's birthday, Halloween.
I'll be darned. So you guys have a special bash for them every year.
Yes, we have a birthday party. We have the cake. And last year we had a big celebration. But it's Halloween is, my wife and I decided Halloween is our time to celebrate them. Instead of having a big event, we're going to start opening up Halloween night for the kids in the neighborhood and the people of the area to come in to celebrate Mr. Shanley and Mr. Hazen's birthday.
Oh, how fun.
Now, do you feel that Mr. Shanley is around at all?
He's around all the time. You know, he comes and he goes. There's time. You usually hear Mr. Shanley walking through the hallways and whistling, coming up down the staircase, slapping his... He when people used to get a little outrated at the bar, he would slam his stick down on top of the bar. In other words, everybody be quiet, get too loud.
Yeah.
And there's times you can hear that. But most of the times you hear him walking around the hallway whistling, and he's here. Then there's times you don't hear him for... It could be 3-4 weeks, sometimes a month and a half, and then all of a sudden he's back again, And the spirits here, most of them, I'd say just about all of them, have been to the other side and back, Somebody once accused me of keeping spirits here to make money off them. That's not me. Like I tell people, and Annie's in the room, she can verify it. She's a good friend of mine. She's a psychic medium. This was like a second home. And if somebody's here that hasn't crossed over, we'll cross them over. And like I tell people that come in, that a lot of people that come in are sensitive.
Yeah.
If you feel somebody that's here that you run into that hasn't crossed, let me know, and I want to be there with you, and we'll cross them over.
Well, that's the only ethical thing to do.
And Annie and I had done that,
Oh, you
Annie
have
and I had crossed somebody over.
It's a beautiful experience, I hear. To see.
Annie had a tough time with it. It's very draining. I filmed it and everything, and she did the whole thing. It was her, that crossed him over. She brought his daughter.
How can you tell? What do they do prior to that would let you know that they haven't crossed over? And then what is the process, and how do you know once they're crossed over and at peace?
Well, the one with Annie, what happened was that we had an event. I don't allow Ouija boards, provoking or things like that in a hotel. And there was a group here.
Thank you so much.
And they made themselves a homemade Ouija board. And they started on this Ouija board. And after they left, this place was in turmoil. Stores slamming, screaming. I mean, it was unbelievable. And Annie doesn't come over unless she always calls me before she comes. And she says, "You're home. I'm going to stop over for coffee." And, I'm home. Come over. And she came over and she says, "There's something I've been..." The spirits told me to come, and she came. She wanted to know what was wrong. And my wife and Annie sat down in the bar room, and Annie turns around and says to me, "It's kind of funny because little Rosie's next to me, but all the other spirits of the hotel are standing there in the corner." And she started talking to the spirits, and Madeline was doing the talking with Annie, and told him that there was a gentleman in the hotel that hasn't crossed, and he's very aggravated and everything else, and he's looking for revenge. Something happened to him, and he was murdered or something, and he's looking to get revenge for, he's looking for this person.
Yeah.
And they told her that he was welcome to come back once he crossed over. And they told us that he was on the third floor, and they were very uncomfortable with him. And Annie and I went up on the third floor, and that's where we confronted him. And, you know, it's a tough experience, you know, and it dragged a lot out of Annie. I mean, it drained her dry. I mean, she was in tears and everything else. It wasn't Annie anymore. It was like almost somebody else.
Yeah, when she was finished,
I mean, I put my arms around her and kept on asking, "You okay? You okay?" You know, it was really, it was an experience.
Wow.
We had an out here. I live 9 miles from where gold was discovered in, you know, 1849,
right.
Over by Marshall Gold Discovery Park. And me and a friend of mine, Christine, we went out there and did some EVP sessions and got some extraordinary activity in December of last year. And one of the things we picked up on EVP was this spirit almost screaming at us to help cross them over. And we had never run into that before. In all the EVP work we've done, we've never actually had a full-blown request like that. And so we've been a little delayed getting out there to take care of it. But we've got we did our research and have looked into what we need to do this. But I won't say fearful, but a little concerned, you know, about what the process is going to be like. But we're going to do it, and hopefully it's going to be a positive experience. So
like Annie says to me, Annie says, if you see me going too far, get me out of it.
Yeah.
Because it could drag you in with them, you know,
yeah.
And that's what I was watching out for, you know. And it is a little frightening, you know. You know, I mean, she really broke down. I mean, she was crying and everything else. And, I mean, her whole tone and everything else was completely different. I mean, and Annie is a fantastic psychic medium, you know. I mean, she is awesome. She really is, you know. That's one thing I can say about her.
Does she have a website out there? Or?
Yes, it's anniesreadings.com.
Anniesreadings.com, because I'll post that.
Where's Annie? Where does she live or do her?
She lives in Woodsboro. Like right outside of Woodsboro.
Okay.
In fact, she's been doing shows with Lizzie on Block Talk Radio.
Oh, okay.
She just started with Lizzie on that.
You know, Sal, the one thing that I wanted to say to you is I found it interesting. The last time I was talking to your son, I had correctly identified Jonathan, and that I recommended that some balls be brought in because he likes to roll balls. And it's interesting that he actually rolls these things.
Yes, we got that on film.
Yeah, I know. And I was telling John, last time I talked to Sal's son, because I do remote viewing, and I'd mentioned that this young man's name was Jonathan, that I would recommend that they get some balls and jacks and stuff, because he likes to roll them, and lo and behold, he actually does.
Yeah. You know, after that, we started putting balls up there. He has toys up there. He's got toy trucks. And I mean, he's got a little of everything up there, but he loves the ball. That's
I know
he
does.
Because you
know. Your son, he's like, how did you know that? And I'm like, I just do. Just go get him. He's like, okay.
Well, hey guys, I'm gonna break in here. We're at the 30-minute break, and what I'm gonna do is give everybody their moment of whatever they need to do in that half hour.
Go pee.
5-minute break. yes, go tinkle, as Miss Christine from CJEVP says so often. So we're going to come back in about 4 minutes, and then we'll also get on and talk with Chris about some of her experiences. And you know, Sal, if you want to stay on the line and continue on, we're just going to go all the way and have a great time.
All right, I'll hang on.
Okay,
yeah, stay with us, Sal. Stay with us.
All right, yeah, and
I will.
So here we go with our break, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Whoa. My love. can do so much for you. Still more, I need your love. Spill your love to me. Lonely rivers flow to the sea, to the open arms of the sea. Wait for me, I'll be coming home, wait for me.
John, you want to know something about that song?
Yeah, what?
That was the Righteous Brothers, and that was my first wife and I's song.
Oh, my God, I picked a good one. I was looking for something really New York, you know, and I remembered it was like New York.
She passed away in 95.
Well, that's touching. I think maybe somebody was using me to say hello to you.
There
yes,
you go.
Yes.
Oh, my. Well, God.
That hit home.
Oh my goodness! I'm honored. Yeah,
that was
so.
A sign.
Well, now I'm totally flustered. I can't even look at my notes. Funny. let's see, Chris. Let's talk about a little bit about you now. As far as what happened, you and I met on the Queen Mary last week. And you mentioned you were from New York when we were – matter of fact, you guys caught me before I was getting ready to go out on my Saturday investigation. You grabbed me, and we sat down and talked, and that's when I found out some of your history. And
mm-hmm.
It says here you were you grew up in Ulster County near Kingston, New York, and
mm-hmm.
you lived in a house down the street from your grandparents, and you spent many hours down in the basement and cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, there was an old pool table, and I'm going to let you take it from there.
Okay. Well, there was an old pool table down in the cellar, and growing up as a little child, my cousins and I spent many, many hours down in the basement. It was just a cool place to hang out. We loved it down there. We played pool all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here we are now, like, you know, 40 years later, and, you know, the grandparents have aged, and my grandfather had died. My grandmother went into a senior residence, so my dad sold the house. He put it on the market, and the neighbors across the street purchased the house. They fixed it all up, and then they rented it out. So the new renters moved in. Everything was all cool. And about a year later, my father had gotten a phone call from the landlord. And what had happened was the new tenants had two small children, and the children would go down in the basement all the time, and they'd play pool. And, again, they loved being down in the basement. And my father, when he sold the house, he couldn't remove the pool table because it was so big and cumbersome. So he just left it down there. So
yeah.
It still remains. It's still there. Well, the children would always go downstairs, and they would come back upstairs, and they'd be talking with each other and talking amongst themselves about the old man in the basement. The parents would always kind of listen to them, and they would listen to them down in the basement, and they would hear the kids talking to this old man, and they just thought, oh, it's just one of their little invisible friends, you know. And the parents just laughed it off, but then they started getting concerned as it just kept happening all the time, and the kids were always describing this man as being tall with long gray beard. He was dressed in black. He would always have a black coat on, kind of a big collar, and he had on like a big tall hat, a black hat with a big brim.
Yeah.
And they were just always describing him as being dressed the same. And they came up one day and said to the parents, that old man beat us at pool again. So the parents started getting more concerned, and they called the landlord, and they said, hey, you know, what's going on here? You know, maybe there's a homeless person or something. Somebody's getting into our cellar. I don't know what's going on. We're really scared because in the cellars back east or basements, there's usually an entryway with, you know, a door. You walk out into an entryway and then up some steps, and that exits outside.
Yeah.
So there's usually two entryways into the basement, usually, you know, a set of stairs from within the house itself, and then there's usually some stairs that go down into the basement from outside. So the parents were concerned maybe there was someone getting into the house from that basement entryway.
Yeah.
So they called the landlords. The landlords, in turn, called my dad and said, was there anything going on in this house? Is there, you know, a homeless person that you guys have kicked out? Is there a way to get into this house? So my father and the landlord and, you know, everybody went over to the house, and they thought, okay, well, let's look in the entryway, because at this point the kids were telling the parents that the old man was walking out the door, but they kept insisting that this old man was walking through the door.
Oh,
and
boy.
Pointing to the entryway.
Oh.
And the parents were like, oh, my gosh, you know, what's going on here? So all the adults got together, and they opened up this entryway door, and there was absolutely no sign of intrusion or entry.
Wow. There
were no obvious signs that anyone had come down that entryway. It was very, very dusty. There were no footprints. And the door was basically still sealed shut. So there was, in fact, no way for anyone to have ever gotten down into the basement. It was sealed. There was no homeless person basically down there. And my understanding is that it kept happening, and the parents just started getting too scared about this. They were just too freaked out. And they have since moved out, and there's new renters in there now, and I don't know if they're still experiencing this or not. I tried to put a call in to the landlords, and I haven't heard back from them yet, and I'm actually now in the process of continuing the research, because my dad had died 2.5 years ago, so he was actually doing a lot of research on the house when he had passed away. And what he had found out about the house was that it was built in 1924. It's a little cottage. It was about 882 square feet. And at one time, and unfortunately we can't find his notes or the deed record, so I'm now doing that again, but he had said that the home was either, it was owned or used as housing for a religious group, possibly having like nuns or priests in it. And the attire that the children had described this old man as having, you know, been wearing was exactly what an old man would wear that would probably fit that time period, you know, for religious folks that were living in that area. There were a lot of, you know, Dutch settlers and, you know, so it's a mystery. It's a total mystery. We as children never experienced anything down there. We always felt very comfortable down there, and I had never, you know, seen or heard of a spirit or a ghost. My grandmother is still alive, but she's in her 90s and has Alzheimer's. So when I go back to New York, I'm hoping to maybe talk to her a little bit because she does still have a lot of her old memory, you know,
mm-hmm.
and see if she ever had any experiences in that house down in the cellar. So we're thinking, and I'm doing research because I want to do I'm going to order up some deed searches on the property. You know, I have the old deed book numbers and the deed page numbers, and I'm going to actually order up a bunch of stuff from a title search company because I want to find out who owned the house, who had lived there, if there were any deaths in the home or, you know, what have you. But we're thinking it was somebody that had to do with a religious being that was down there playing pool with the kids.
Yeah, that's, and you never had any inkling, though, before that this would have happened.
No, I mean, us as children, we never felt anything or knew of anything going on. You know, so And that makes me wonder. I mean, since going on the Queen Mary last week, and experiencing what we had experienced there, it really has opened up my mind to this whole aspect of it now. So now I'm just very inquisitive, and I want to learn. And
You guys were so funny on that. It was so great working with you, and we had a grand time there. Wasn't that something when we went down into the forward cargo hold?
Oh, that was so scary.
You said you got an EVP of...
Yes, my friend Chris, she has multiple recordings. She counted about 8 or 9 of them, and I did hear a bunch of them, and her husband has to get them on the computer, and then I'll send them up to you so that you can post them on the website.
Yeah. Matter of fact, we'll probably have you on again to just you and her and you know, play them and go forward with that.
Yeah, she's got to get them loaded up. They're very obvious that there's some activity on that ship, for sure.
Yeah, I caught so many. I was just shocked that I'm only halfway through my analysis, but I did pick up did you ever get down to Ardeck? To, you know, the Ardeck just below. I think it was a couple of decks down from A-deck.
We did go on every deck, but a lot of the decks when we were just touring and such, there were a lot of people around, and she didn't have her recorder on. So
yeah, I've loaded up a couple here. One of them was in the Grand Ballroom, and I picked up a very, very clear male voice coming in. I was all alone out in there and just walking through. And I can go ahead and play that. Here we go.
Remember somewhere.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. You know, I the one that you sent me too, with a male voice saying, "Who are the passengers?"
Oh yeah, and it said your name.
I couldn't tell whether they said Stanley or Standing. I think they said Stanley. I couldn't really tell.
Well, here's
that
the
was very interesting.
Yeah, and then here's the kicker. I got another one that says Bobo.
Oh, no.
I'm not kidding you. I've got it. So I'll send you a copy.
Oh, my gosh. You're kidding.
I'm not kidding you. I've got it. So I just found that one. That was just the other day. I picked that one up, and I went, wait a minute. And I went and looked up your email, and I went,
that's
oh, no.
Yeah, that's my nickname, my email address. Holy
yeah,
cow.
So we got this bubble kind of noise, and I'll send that to you and see what you think. But yeah,
she
you
has
were
a lady
you were being,
singing. She has a lady singing, and it's clear as day. You can hear a lady singing, and in one of the ballroom areas, there is a spirit that keeps coming through with a lady that used to sit at a piano and sing, and so she's clear as day on one of Chris's recordings, too.
Well, we'll
that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'll have to get to the Queen Mary one of these days.
Oh, it's so cool!
I'll get there.
Yeah, that ship. I took four steps in there and went, oh my goodness, it was so haunted. I mean, just completely permeating. The minute you step in, you know you're in.
Yeah.
You're in that kind of a place. As a matter of fact, I was talking with Sal, you know, earlier when we were getting set to, you know, have him on the show. And, you know, it basically there was the observation, a common observation we have is when we're in haunted places or in the presence of spirit, you get this kind of an ocean wave feeling and you get kind of dizzy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all through the Queen Mary. I mean, you know, it's one thing to be in a bed and breakfast, you know, which is, you know, a good size. I think the Chamonix's got 35 rooms. But, I mean, the Queen Mary is 1,000 feet long and multiple decks. You know, of this, and it's just,
and it's protected from the waves. It's in water, but the water's not moving. So there's
yeah,
no
it has
waves.
A breakwater around it, so it's completely, there's like a few pipes to let the water in to keep it floating, but it's pretty secure, so you're not bobbing like you would expect on, you know, on a regular ship out in the ocean or out in a bay. It was a much different feeling, and I don't know if you felt that feeling when you walked in. It was I wouldn't say ominous, but it was definitely that odd.
Well, it feels like you're going back in time, and you're stepping on that ship, and you do just have this very odd feeling. Now, not claustrophobic. It's just this overwhelming feeling of, like Chris described it, is this heavy feeling. We were really psyched and excited, and we couldn't wait to get there. And as soon as we stepped on that ship, it was we just slowed down and mellowed out and didn't really feel depressed, but it was just a different feeling.
Well,
and it just hit you.
We actually have a Queen Mary connection with Sal, believe it or not. And Sal, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah,
what she says is true. It's like walking in a hotel. It's a complete different atmosphere. And John from Connecticut.
Yeah, he did a psychic tour of that boat.
Right.
About a year before he died. Yeah.
You know, it's something else. When you walk into the place, it's like stepping back in time. It's such a relief that the atmosphere itself is completely different than the other side of the door. You know, it's really something. You know?
Yeah, I mean, when I got I went in there and I was stayed in the stateroom, just about 200 feet away from the main desk on deck A. And, I mean, you walked in and you felt it, but the minute I got into the corridor, it was really strong. And,
right.
You know, I ran a few EVPs and was getting stuff right off the bat, and I'm going, this place is, like, full of, whoa, you know, I'm going to be sleeping here for two nights, okay. But your father actually crossed on one or two of the voyages of the Queen Mary, correct?
Yes, my father was a prisoner of war. He was caught at the Battle of the Bulge. And when they were liberated and everything, and they were shipped back to the United States, he came back on the Queen Mary, which at that time they used as a troop ship. And
wow. Have you ever been on it?
I have never been on it.
Oh, you need to go on it because you have that connection.
And my father says, when they pulled it, you know where the Verrazano Bridge is now?
Yes.
okay, when they got in, up to that section there, he says that the soldiers were jumping off the ship to swim back to land. They were so excited to be back on American soil.
Oh, my God.
That's a heck of a drop. I would be thinking real hard about China.
I know. But I guess what they've already been through, they didn't really care.
Well, we saw what the pictures looked like of all those soldiers on that ship, jam-packed like tuna on the top.
Yeah,
right.
16,000 at a time. That was like one of the world records to this day, even that many troops on a single transport. And they had them packed in there like sardines, and it just was amazing that they could have done that. But it did shorten the war. Matter of fact, I mean, they had the Kurosawa, I believe, was one of the ships that got accidentally cut in half by Queen Mary.
Yeah,
and,
maybe.
There was a disaster at sea, 300 soldiers lost, and because of the way the war effort, the pressure to continue the war and keep the Queen Mary safe, it was a strategic asset of the British Crown and the United States to get our troops there. They couldn't stop. And so, because 16,000 souls versus 300, do the math. I did not remember the part where, though, Sal, where you said your dad was a POW. So
right,
how long
that was
he in? How long was he in, I guess, North Africa?
No, at the Battle of Bulge, that was over in Europe.
Oh, okay, in Europe. So he was captured by the Germans.
Right, he was caught by the Germans, liberated by the Russians. The Americans sat back. They seen the Russians coming in, and at that time they were allies. So they seen the Russians coming in, and the Americans sat back and says, well, we'll let the Russians take care of it. And the Russians came in and liberated the camp. Matter of fact, just before the Russians came to the camp, the Germans took off and left all the prisoners there. And the Russians came in, fed them, gave them all new clothes to wear. And, and my father says they were there about almost 48 hours. And my father and another bunch asked the Russians which way was the American lines. They pointed to it, and they took off and headed towards the American lines. And
got out of it, and he was glad.
Wow, yeah.
He says he didn't want to hang around before the Russians changed their mind or anything.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Bye!
I'd be a little paranoid, too, if I'd been. I don't know how long he was
but I
would be like, oh, my God, I just want to get home.
Oh, see ya!
That's just like when I go to the city. My whole family were construction workers. My grandfather was the foreman, the head foreman on the Empire State Building. My father worked on a Pan Am building, which became the Life building. They worked in just about every skyscraper in Manhattan. And when I go down there and look, and it brings back a lot of memories of the family. My uncles were foremen on construction jobs, and so it brings back a lot of memories, And my father and I both worked on the Trade Center. And matter of fact, he died September 2nd. And this September 1st, and then the 11th, that's when the thing happened with the Trade Center, so.
I'm thinking there's going to be a lot of activity in those new buildings when.
I think you're right.
Because there were a lot of lost souls, and I bet you there's a lot of wandering souls after that day.
Yeah.
I actually went to Ground Zero for the year memorial, and you can hear people. I was down there to see President Bush and the Circle of Friends, and because I lost a girlfriend when the South Tower came down, and they never found her, and so I went for the year memorial, and we walked up to the memorial, and I couldn't move, and my girlfriend who lives on Long Island, her and her husband took me there, and I looked at her and she couldn't move either. My feet wouldn't move, and I just started just crying my eyes out, and you could hear 3,000 people. It was deafening. They were just screaming, and I heard glass breaking, and I sank to my knees, and I couldn't move.
Yeah, it's a powerful place.
I work in the defense industry, and it was very just unbelievable. I got down to the plant that I work at, and the word was out that down at our southern facility that the Army had already secured it, and there were machine guns out all around that particular facility for a whole lot of reasons. And our facility wasn't, you know, didn't need that, but we got in, and I called a friend of mine in Washington, D.C., and our sales offices were right across from the Pentagon. And I remember him, he was actually crying, telling me about what he was seeing happening over at the Pentagon. And it was just,
yeah.
I had been, as a matter of fact, oddly enough, 9/11 changed my whole life, because I had been getting ready to quit the company I'm at, and for a whole lot of reasons. And I got talked into staying, and the deal was for me to finish my degree program. And so because of 9/11, I've got my bachelor's degree in IT now, because the company, wanted me to stay on, and made it clear they needed every last body, because we went from 20% staffing in our building to 100% in a year. We were running out of office space. It changed everything overnight.
Wow.
But hey guys, we're coming up on 3 minutes to the end of the show, so I do. I'm sorry. I'm gonna talk
about that all night.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I think we probably ought to do another show with you guys.
A 9/11 New York show.
Yeah, we'll do a 9/11 New York show later in September. But I'm gonna thank Sal for being with us, and you're a great American and a wonderful human being.
I thank you. It is an honor being on your show.
And
thank you, Sal. Appreciate it very much. Thanks for being on
Anytime.
Our show.
Yeah,
and I can't wait to see you guys.
Yeah, we'll be there. I'm looking at June, so we'll be there in person, and I'd love to investigate in your hotel.
You know what day in June? Or?
I'm still working on it. I got to talk to my boss. So Monday, when I see him, I'm going to figure out a time, and then we'll hop a plane and be there.
Carla is demanding 2 hours.
I know, and I was just going to say that to Carla. So, Carla, we love you.
Carla!
I'm moving it to 2 hours.
Carla, Julia Child here.
Oh, yes, it was a wonderful show. Thank you so much, Chris Stanley and Sal, for being here. It was a wonderful show.
You're welcome.
Save the Queen. Oh, yes. So
I want to thank Chris, too. She's a fantastic person.
Thank you, Chris, for being on our show. That was really cool.
Well, Sal, I'll be meeting up with you when I get to New York, and who knows when that'll be. Maybe this summer sometime.
Okay, anytime. I'm here.
All right, guys. Well, hey, it's been a great show, and what we're going to do is in 1 week we're going to be doing our show will be on Sunday instead of Saturday, because we're going to be moving into an investigation that night on a private
residence.
That's
right.
So the show will be on Sunday instead of Saturday for everybody, and mark your calendars. And that show will be about future paranormal investigation techniques and what the future of the paranormal will be. So that said, I thank everyone, and before the show cuts off automatically, I'll just go ahead and play the closing. And thank you all for being here.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night. God bless.
Good night.
God bless.
God bless
Bye-bye.
You.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And Kat, thanks once again. It was another good show.
Sure.
Okay. Bye.
Later.